Despite significant investments in cybersecurity, the government's current state of readiness leaves a lot to be desired. And that's according to security managers themselves, responding to the latest survey from ISC Squared. Joining me with more on the Global Information Security Workforce Study is Dan Waddell, Director of Government Affairs at the National Capital Region for ISC Squared. Dan, good morning.
Good morning, Tom. How are you?
All right. So one of the top line findings, the very first one that you list, is that two-thirds of the respondents, and I guess you reached about 1,800 feds, think cyber has stagnated or gotten worse in the last 2 years. How do you think we should interpret this finding?
Yeah, two-thirds is a pretty powerful number, Tom. And in fact, if you dive a little bit deeper into that number, you saw that 5% of our folks thought that security has gotten worse since our last report in 2013. And we asked, so for those that said that we are worse off, we asked them, okay, why do you think we're worse off? And they listed a kind of a top four list of reasons for reduced security, and they were the inability to keep pace with threats, because we know the threat environment is constantly changing. The bad guys are always improving their techniques and tools and procedures. There's a poor understanding of risk management within government. Inadequate funding always seems to be an issue, particularly with budgets and our in our cycle of sequestration recently, and just the new kind of tightening around the dollars and cents. And then finally, not enough qualified security professionals available. That was really a common theme throughout this study, is the workforce shortage.
Yeah, the workforce was throughout this whole study. And I'm curious as to why you think that's still the case. I mean, there have been contests, challenges, courses launched by institutions of higher education, all the work that ISC Squared itself does all these years, and constant publicity from industry and government about the need for cyber people. Where are they going, or are they even being created at all?
I think they're being created. I just think that we have not spent enough time on this issue collectively as an industry. If you look at the study, we project a resource gap of 1.5 million by the year 2020 globally. And I think another powerful statistic that came out of this was only 6% of the workforce is under the age of 30. So, I mean, 6%, that's a pretty powerful number. We've got an aging workforce, particularly in the federal government here. We've got a lot of feds coming up for retirement. So I think we need to kind of double down on our efforts and really do a better job collectively to really educate, one, starting at the middle and high school levels, and then once they get into the workforce, is really focus on the training aspect of it and really, really try to reach out to some of those other pools of talent that may be there. I mean, women typically are underrepresented in this industry, and certainly minorities. We've got wounded warriors coming home from overseas. We could retrain that pool as well. So I think we just need to kind of take a step back and maybe look at what's working, what's not working, and double down on the effort.
All right. And the other issue, of course, always comes up in every survey of every group is funding. But what do they mean by that? Because the federal government, I don't think, has been all that stingy in cybersecurity funding.
Yeah, we actually saw a little bit of an increase in our responders saying that the budgets have loosened up a little bit. So I think what you're seeing now is people are kind of getting excited, like, hey, we're getting some new money. And so then the question is, what are they going to spend this money on? And so we asked our folks, if you had that kind of magic pot of money, what would you spend it on? And really, kind of across the board, it was personnel and it was the security tools. So it was the people and the technology. And really, if you look at personnel, it's additional bodies. So you've got a staff right now that is overworked, that is overstressed. Getting some additional folks on that team to kind of spread the workload out, I think, is a fantastic way to start. Certainly training and education, I've already mentioned, and also getting your staff certified, that so you actually know and have that warm fuzzy that the person that you're getting has a minimal baseline of information.
And the other issue, I think, is the threat response times have not changed. That is to say that it takes just as long as it did 2 years ago for an agency to respond to a threat or to a cyber breach. What's going on there?
We actually saw a slight uptick in terms of the U.S. federal numbers compared to the private industry. So that's there's a lot of bad news in this report, Tom. But I think one of the good things that we can take away from is that the federal government seems to be doing a little bit better job. But still, we have a large percentage of folks that are not getting to these breaches in time. I think the number was 21% still take a week or more to actually respond to that threat. So we need to do a little bit better job to get those numbers down. And again, it all all starts with making sure that your teams are fully staffed.
And one of the final pieces of bad news I wanted to ask you about is the NIST framework, which into which a lot of effort has gone, and many publications and lots of information. I've read some of the framework documents, and they're quite detailed, and yet nobody seems to be paying all that much attention to them.
Yeah, and so I think an interesting distinction that we make here, because we ask about two different frameworks, right? So there's the NIST risk management framework within the federal government that now both DOD and the federal civilian sector are adopting, so the Ron Ross framework. But there was also the NIST cybersecurity framework that President Obama adopted under the executive order late last year and released that to the critical infrastructure framework. And so we're still seeing not a lot of adoption. There was only 15% of our responders that said that they had implemented that framework. And I think if you talk to that community, they will agree that there needs to be additional outreach and awareness on this topic to that sector. We've seen a lot of discussions, particularly after the Sony breach, across both academia. You saw President Obama at Stanford a few months ago. Government and industry. So it's going to take everybody kind of getting on that same sheet of music from all the different stakeholder groups and helping to advance the framework.
My guest is Dan Waddell. He's Director of Government Affairs for the National Capital Region of ISC Squared. And when you add all of this up, I mean, what do you think it means for initiatives such as the drive to share threat information between government and industry when, in terms of risk management and frameworks, they're not on the same page to begin with? And nobody thinks they have enough people or money.
Yeah, I think that's why you're seeing such a flurry of activity around the information sharing topic. You're actually seeing bills being passed in the House. You're actually seeing legislators come together and starting to write some bills and trying to get some consensus. So we're still waiting to see what the Senate is going to do in terms of information sharing. But the good news is that DHS and the folks out there are now kind of getting that community together and really helping to push some of the discussions at some pretty high levels of government.
And just a quick side question, since the survey went to 14,000 people around the world, what about outside of the United States? How are some of the developed areas doing?
Yeah, I mean, obviously this report was released under the ISC Squared Foundation. You know, you mentioned 14,000 members. There was a pretty good breakdown in both our members and internally to the organization. It was about 11,000. And when I say members, it's someone that has taken and passed one of our exams. And then there were about 2,800 outside. And so if you look globally, I think one of the things that we're doing better within the federal government as compared to the global industry is the ratio of women, 14% compared to only 10% globally. So we're seeing, you know, that number maybe go up a little bit in the government. We still have a lot of work to do. I thought that was a pretty telling statistic. And another one, too, is how often is the federal government conducting security scans on their applications within both their data centers and their cloud environments? And we've seen, you know, those numbers compared to the global responders a little higher, 61% for internally developed applications in the federal government compared to 49% outside. So those were a couple that I pulled out that I thought were interesting.
And also the issue, we talked about information sharing. The other big cyber issue is supply chain, and for the federal government to ensure the cybersecurity of electronic items it buys and all the supply chains going into those items. And that seems to be an area that's difficult getting going also.
It is, and I think historically, if you look at how we've dealt with supply chain across the federal government, you have everybody kind of going in their own direction with vendor management. I know the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, Ann Rung, who's the administrator over there recently, basically said, hey, look, we're going to get everybody together on the same page. I think that's where you start the conversation is start to vet these vendors, start to get a sense of trust with the supply chain across the board and start to share that information across the federal government. And you'll actually see folks start to incorporate that language into RFPs and the statements of work, and we'll see a little bit better. But, yes, that's a big weakness that we really need to focus on moving forward.
And the continuous monitoring and continuous diagnostics and mitigation systems, that's another initiative in the government. And that how is that taking off in light of this, what the study shows?
Well, see, this study came out, so we conducted this study between October 2014 and January 2015. And I think the CDM program just hasn't had enough time to take off. And I know there are still a lot of folks within the federal government that are kind of in a wait and see mode to see how that program is going to go. There is, you know, the good news is there is dedicated funding. They are asking for more funding for the next fiscal year. But you know, you've got a lot of folks that have been doing continuous monitoring on their own. And so it's all about control. It's all about having that stovepipe. So there's still some folks that are kind of weighing that decision to see if we're going to join this program or if we just kind of continue to try to do the best we can ourselves. So I think we're still in a little bit of a wait and see mode there, Tom.
And with respect to readiness and with respect to response times to threats and so forth, within the federal sector, could you see any differences in the study between civilian side and defense side?
Yeah, well, in terms of defense and civilian, we kind of group those two categories together. But again, what we're seeing is the federal government sector is just a little bit quicker in terms of the private sector. We also saw the fact that in terms of a breach, we're actually being able to remediate those vulnerabilities a little bit quicker in the federal government. I think that goes. There's a lot of work that's being done within U.S. CERT and some other our other breach partners within the federal government to help get those times down.
And what are perceptions of the cloud? Will that aid cybersecurity, do people think, or do they still have that trepidation going back to the pre-FedRAMP days?
I think there's still a pretty large segment of folks that are in a wait-and-see mode there as well. I think 50% of our responders said within the next 2 years they'll make it a priority, but right now they're still kind of on the fence. I think FedRAMP's a great program. I think what you're going to see from Matt Goodrich and his team, and they released a roadmap here a few months ago. They're going to focus on the high baseline, the tick overlay. They're going to work on some training to actually go out to the acquisition folks and get some of those folks trained up. So I think you're seeing kind of a creep and crawl to the cloud. People are kind of putting up their very low sensitivity data to the cloud, but they're kind of waiting to see, do we really want to put our sensitive data there? So hopefully by the time we release our next study in 2017, we'll see some broader numbers in terms of cloud adoption.
And a final question. Since the last study, I would say the mobility movement has come on really strong in the last 2 years. And that, of course, has its own cyber concerns. You think the rise of mobility has contributed to this feeling that we're not really where we need to be yet on the part of federal agencies?
So, yeah, I think what you're seeing is mobile is a little bit less of a concern than it was perhaps a while ago. The BYOD programs that have been implemented within the past couple of years, I think we're seeing some traction from that. But still, the Internet of Everything, the Internet of Things, I think is kind of the new buzzword, and that everything seems to have an IP address now, not just your phone. So really trying to get a grasp on what is Internet-enabled within your stack and making sure that you've got confidence that whatever that device is, that it is secure and whatever data you're using or you're passing through that device, that it is secure and you do have trust.
And speaking of the stack, of course, most agencies are running dual stacks with respect to IP version 4 and IP version 6. And when IP version 6 was coming out a few years ago, 10 years ago, really, the whole idea was how much greater security it could give. But as long as people are running dual stacks, they'll have the IP version 4 legacy weaknesses.
Not only that, but we're running out of IP addresses on the IP version 4. So we did not ask that question in this survey. That's probably a good question to roll into the next report in terms of IPv6 adoption. But, yeah, that's a good point, Tom. In addition to increasing the space, there are some security benefits to that, cutting down on the ability to actually spoof IP addresses, et cetera. So that's something that we'll look at next time.
Dan Waddell is Director of Government Affairs for the National Capital Region of ISC Squared. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thanks, Tom.